So what are you supposed to do between each Engadget podcast? Wait in silence? I'm Matt Smith, and every morning I walk through the day's biggest tech stories. It's short, relevant, and ready for listening whenever you wake up. Find Engadget Morning Edition wherever you find your podcasts, or ask your smart speaker for the latest news from Engadget.
What's up, everybody, and welcome back to the Engadget podcast. I'm senior editor Devendra Hardawar.
I'm reviews editor Sherlyn Lowe.
This week, it's all about Samsung's Galaxy S21 and the S21 Ultra. Literally, the minute we started recording this is when the embargo went up, so we could actually start talking about it. Sherlyn's review is up in Engadget. Also, Chris Velasco did the S21 Ultra. So we'll be diving deeply into those new phones. And also, some of the top news this week, we had a little bit of a change of leadership in America, so that's worth talking about. As always, if you're enjoying the show, please be sure to subscribe to the Engadget podcast on iTunes, Spotify, or your podcaster of choice. Leave us a review on iTunes. You can always email us questions at podcast@engadget.com. We also typically record live around 10 a.m. Eastern on Thursdays. It's a little later this week because of the S21, but join us on our YouTube channel. You can interact with us in the chat. Something you won't be getting in the audio version of this podcast is like the live hands-on demos by Sherlyn of this phone. So that's a reason to tune in or go back and check out the actual YouTube recording. That's still up there, even if you're listening to this in audio. So before we get into our gadget nerdery, I think it is worth just spending a little time acknowledging the fact that we have left the Trump era of America. We've entered the Joe Biden and Kamala Harris era. And I feel a little better. It feels like an enormous weight has been lifted from my shoulders. It's sort of like that scene, I forget the king in Lord of the Rings, right? But the one who is kind of weighed down by the curse, and all of a sudden the color rushes back to his face and he comes back to life. I kind of feel like that right now.
I forgot his name, but the King of Gondor.
Is it the King of Gondor? Yeah. Well, we're nerds.
Ronan. Anyway.
Yeah.
Rohan.
That was Rohan.
Yes, thank you.
I kind of feel like that. I feel re-energized. And I spent a lot of time yesterday just keeping the virtual inauguration on in the background. And it was really, it felt like a weird change of pace from when we were literally just a couple of weeks ago talking about a literal riot on the Capitol building. So it is crazy how fast things are changing. I'm excited. Sherlyn, was this your first time looking at a presidential inauguration in the U.S.?
I thought so. And then I remembered I actually did tune into bits and pieces of the Trump
inauguration. I'm sure you had to. Yeah.
And I blocked it out of my memory. but then I remember seeing scenes where the Obamas came out to greet the Trumps and, in the car, and Trump. Donald Trump left the car first, and then Melania.
I also remember that scene. His inauguration speech was this weird fire and brimstone type of thing. Like, it was just very doomsday. Whereas right now, literally the opposite. One thing I'll remember from the Trump inauguration is that day I went to go see XXX3, The Return of Xander Cage, right after. And that ended up being the appropriate movie because it was all about this, this group of basically people of color who are fighting the U.S. government, literally fighting the U.S. government. That movie rules. Oh, so be sure to check that out. What did you enjoy from the virtual inauguration? Because I did think it was a really, first of all, they knew they couldn't really have a huge party because of COVID. And also, I think now, especially this year, it is a good time to have a platform to show off, virtually like exactly what's happening, what's changing, and to kind of recenter America. And I think they at least did a great job of that with the virtual inauguration, right? It was a well-constructed event. There were a lot of musicians, a lot of people just really trying to lift up the vibe of the country. So I kind of appreciated that after what we suffered through for the last 4 years. Anything in particular that struck you, Sherlyn?
Yeah, I tweeted this already, but like I'm pretty sure 16-year-old or even 22-year-old me wouldn't believe that I just spent like the whole day with news TV on in the background, just watching speech after speech
like
after
an
speech,
adult,
right?
But yeah,
like a real yeah. I told my parents when I was a child I never watched the news, but anyway, what stood out was I think for everyone it seemed like Amanda Gorman and her Youth Nobel laureate for poetry, I believe, gave a wonderful performance, I guess, is the word for it. It's the delivery
of her poem, too.
Like, amazing. She stood out. And I think that's the other thing, is that now that we're all at home, not being able to watch this inauguration, all working from home, we all had the excuse to turn on our TVs or have the feet playing on the background. And everyone had the chance to watch her make that delivery at the same time. I think that had a greater impact than say a regular inauguration without the pandemic and without this virtual staging.
There is usually some poet who gets up during the inauguration to kind of ring things in, but this was, it felt like such a defining moment. And I, for me, that was the collective, like, oh crap, we were all watching this and people were tweeting about it. I think I tweeted like, this should be the new national anthem, basically. Right. And beyond that, you know, we're going to be following the Biden administration and kind of what they mean, what it means for tech and the environment and things like that, too. Like, things specifically related to the beats we cover. But hey, it's worth noting, yesterday, the first day, I think for his half day of work, he got there like a true Lisa Simpson, you know, who was apparently, he and his administration just had been doing the work and were ready, like, okay, we got the okay. We have sign 17 executive orders to execute on day one. And that included rejoining the Paris Climate Accord, calling for federal building mask mandates, which shockingly has not been done. He extended student loan deferment, basically also reoriented coronavirus leadership so that the federal government was actually more in charge. There's just so much. It's a long list of just like bangers and wins, I'd say, like revoking the Keystone XL pipeline, like amazing. Canceled rollbacks on emission standards, astounding. He stopped oil and natural gas leases in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. It's just insane. And this is before we even get into his like $1.9 trillion COVID American Rescue Plan, which that's not directly tech related. But I think anything that helps to spur on small businesses and jobs in America, too, will be something we will end up talking about, too, because we're already seeing tech companies kind of step up to help more. Microsoft offered to give up some office space in Seattle for vaccinations and for whatever they need. So clearly, you know, we're seeing, I think, the entire community step up. We've already talked about like his environmental plan too, which is another $1 trillion effort, and it's going to be a huge, huge deal. And we're going to follow that closely because this is an administration that's at least thinking more about what's new tech, not trying to just bring back oil jobs or trying to do things that the old industries want. It does seem like they're thinking ahead. We're going to need more jobs in this country, too. Like, after the pandemic basically cleared away, basically destroyed tons of jobs and the overall economy and businesses that people used to work for, we need, like, a green energy task force of some kind, you know, to have people who would be going out building those, installing those solar cells, doing things like that to kind of reshape the country. I don't know if you have thoughts about what you're looking forward to, Sherlyn, with this administration.
And one thing he did roll back immediately, or seemed to announce quite early on anyway, is some changes in his immigration policy the immigration policy. And that will have, I think, a great impact on the tech industry. I mean, we've covered the H-1B laws pretty intensively. And as like the resident visa person, I kind of like pay attention to that. I've covered it for us. We'll see what they do. But that to me is something that news-wise I'm paying attention to, because I think that ties quite closely with our scope of coverage.
For sure. And this is where I need to remind people, like, hey, we're a tech site, we're a gadget site, but it is important to realize like all the mechanics of how the government works, because all this stuff kind of affects where your gadgets are going to come from or how these companies actually support bringing in workers from the outside to help build and design the next iPhone. You know, all of this stuff is interrelated, I think, very important. And hey, also, Muslim ban, gone. That's kind of nice. It feels nice to see how much can change just quickly with having competent people in charge. We'll be following along with all this more, you know, in the future. But let's move on to the Galaxy S21 and S21 Ultra.
Oh, hey.
You're that gif of just like coming from behind the curtain and like, hey, I got the new phone.
So I was very excited to learn that my review unit is the lavender S21. it pretty. I like it. Our reviews of the S21 and the S21 Ultra are up. I covered the S21 and Chris Velasco wrote up the review, the S21 Ultra. And these are very different phones, and that's why we chose to split them up. I think usually if the phones are very similar, we tend to bundle them together in one review. But yeah, they're very different. So let's go over what's different, right? Like, why should you pick the S21 versus the S21 Ultra? One thing to note, by the way, and this struck a chord with a lot of our viewers, is that across the entire line, there is no micro SD card slot. So,
Is that the end of an era for Samsung, right? I'm surprised they kept that going for so long.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of people have been asking if the S Pen support on the Ultra marks the end of the Note series, and I feel like there's still enough that the Note series can continue to exist, like micro SD card support on the Note 20 Ultra. Not sure about the smaller Note 20s just yet, but I mean, the Note 20 Ultra might still exist as like one of those very power user sort
maybe
of
maybe they actually but heard anyway. Us and thought, like, maybe we have too many phones, guys. Like,
I'm pretty sure they heard us because every time we write an article that slams them, I get DMs. So
you get DM from Mr. Samsung, but not the Mr. Samsung that was just indicted for bribery charges in Korea. So yeah.
Oh boy.
Yeah.
No. anyhow, so S21, S21 Ultra, the difference, you know, there's a lot of differences, right? The size, for one, this is the S21 is a 6.2-inch screen. The S21 Ultra, I believe, is 6.8-inch. And then, you know, the screen, speaking of that screen, the screen resolution is one of the things that stood out for the S21 because instead of kind of a 2K-ish display like last year, you got a Full HD Plus this year. Whereas on the S21 Ultra, you still have that, 3400 by 1440 display.
So they actually go down in resolution?
They went down in resolution for the S21 and the S21 Plus. That was another complaint on a lot of people's parts.
Let's be realistic. Your eyes will not see that.
Yes,
even if you had perfect vision, even if you had it like right up to your eyeballs, it's really hard to see the differences in those pixels. Yeah.
Exactly. And the screen is small, and it's hard to notice a difference. But I will say that, like, the other thing that that means is in the past, they had the 120Hz refresh rate across the entire lineup, but only supported on Full HD. Huh. So you'd have to go into the settings and select smooth the scrolling or whatever the settings name was, and then it would enable that, but only at it would lock you down to Full HD resolution,
which is now worth it, by the way.
Depending on your preference for battery drain or whatever. But when you look at the S21 Ultra, it's now supported on that higher, I think QHD Plus is the actual resolution, and then as well as 1080. And then this guy, the S21 and the S21 Plus, they support it, but they don't have that higher resolution to choose from anymore. Oh, well. So in a way, you kind of have it all the time if you want it. And you don't have to so-called sacrifice resolution on the bigger phone, but you already like just sacrifice resolution.
Let me just say, we've talked about higher refresh rates, right? Like, that'll make everything look smoother, scrolling especially. And I think that's going to be really noticeable on phones. That is an immediate battery hit, right? Because you were literally refreshing the screen that amount of times faster. So yeah, if you had a 120Hz screen versus a 60Hz screen, that's literally twice as much juice as required to keep that display going. So, you know, it's something I can see why Samsung was like, okay, let's hold back on resolution. Let's kind of like rein a lot of this in, because I feel like so much of these new phones are just a numbers game for a lot of people. Like, we've seen phones with 4K screens. Who cares? Doesn't matter. Not really, not something you can actually see. But yeah, what else specifically? What is different about the 20 and the 21 Trillion? Because I'm really interested in that difference.
To mitigate the refresh rate battery drain a little bit, there is this thing that you can turn on called adaptive motion smoothing. I forget, again, these settings names, I just forget them the day after. But you can adaptive refresh rate. So, but depending on what you do, the software will just adjust the refresh rate down to 48Hz on the S21 or S21 Plus. Say if you're just looking at a picture, right? But if you're scrolling, it will bump up the refresh rate to something like 120Hz, where the smooth animation looks better. On the S21 Ultra, you can go down as low as 10Hz. On the S21 and S21 Plus, the floor is 48Hz. The other differences are, like, S21 Ultra supports the S Pen, and the two smaller ones don't. And then the cameras, this is only a triple camera setup.
Only,
and the main sensor is only 12 megapixels sharp only. main camera is 12 megapixels sharp, but on the Ultra, you got a quad sensor array. You've, you know, the main sensor is 108 megapixels. If you really, really want something that's sharp, but that does enable like some binning on the night mode. And I'll talk about that later. But, and then it has a dual telephoto lens setup on the Ultra, whereas this only has one telephoto option, and it doesn't even do actual optical zoom. It does like hybrid.
What is the point? Let me just say the S21 Ultra, that camera array in the back, because we're basically seeing five lens pods and like the little pod for the flash. Mm-hmm. The ugliest thing I've ever seen on a phone. It is horrific. It looks awful. It just seems like, hey, we had to cram all these lenses in. Let's not like do this in an elegant way. At least the S21 with those three lenses looks a little cleaner, but I hate the way the S21 Ultra looks. Have you seen it in person yet, Sherlyn?
I think I have, but I can't remember. It must be, when I got this phone from V, that's probably when I saw it. But I will say that I don't know how else they can do it. I really don't know how else you can line up four or five sensors like that. I will say, and the other thing I'll say a lot of things, is that I really do, I didn't know if I would like the contour cut. This is what they're calling the way the kind of edge wraps around the corner a little bit to house the camera module instead of having it float in like the middle of nowhere, that hump. I like it because it's actually more even than before. Not completely flush, right? But still,
is that bad
even,
when it comes to protecting the lenses, though? Because I always find like the humps are good to like keep the lenses in a separate thing if you drop your phone or something.
Yeah, I agree with you, but I do think this metal housing is fairly sturdy. I think it can get scratched up, but it seems sturdy. So I haven't dropped this phone so far, which hallelujah. But there's also a slight like you can see sort of like a bit of glass. I don't know, a slight like difference in the it's like dips a little, right? The surface of the camera part dips a little, so there's that sort of gap protection that some companies do. I don't know the technical names of a lot of these things, but yeah, I don't know yet, right? I do think this feels like it's safer than the hump from before. But I'm just so taken with the color. I like the way it looks.
A little nice, even though it's a little boxier. Any other like major differences between the S20 from last year? I don't think it's not a necessary upgrade
from last year
at this point.
It feels like a refinement in a lot of ways. I think that some of the things that stood out to me were surprisingly the software. For example, one thing that our live chat viewers asked us to try out when we were unboxing the S21 Ultra last week was the object eraser tool. So I'm pretty fussy about what appears in my background. I don't want people to see that I live a hobo, sort of messy life.
You can only see a certain extent of like extent of your house in our video right now.
Yes. I'm typically a pretty neat person, and there's not a lot of clutter, but when there is, I like to get rid of it. I just want to have this, I guess, appearance that I'm a neat person. And this tool seemed fun to me, and it's not like these tools haven't existed in some form in other platforms, right? Adobe Photoshop's done this for a while. There's the Me Too selfie editing app has this feature and has had it for a while. But for Samsung to bake it into the native photo editor app is, I think, cool. And it works similarly to those apps, right? In terms of the effectiveness, I just on my blank white wall, I could get rid of artwork and photo frames pretty easily. But like in my doorway, if there's a box and there's all kinds of like other stuff, then it's hard. Like it will leave streaks behind in that auto-generated background. So still kind of like nifty to have if you have like a decent background to work with. And then let's see. The other thing was, okay, so space zoom, right, is one of the big differences between the Ultra and the S21, like an S21 Plus. And on the Ultra, you get up to 100 times space zoom. And it's been improved this year thanks to a combination of that 3x optical and 10x optical, like telephoto lenses. On the S21 and S21 Plus, you're still relying on this hybrid 3x optic zoom situation, and it's not great. It's still pretty muddy. I mean, Samsung says it's like done some work on the algorithm to improve the processing and sharpening, And I mean, again, both V and I asked this in our reviews, which is there's some ethical concerns, and would you ever really need to get beyond 10 times zoom? Is it necessary? But I mean, when I did the test, it's like I like to talk about like behind the scenes review stuff. I was just trying to test something and see like what use could I get out of this feature. I managed to find out that across the like I think like five streets, three streets across from my building, there's been a construction in the works. And there is this big like what looks like a power box on the roof. So I zoomed in and I managed to find out that so-called power box is actually the brand of toilets they were installing in that building.
You found the toilet boxes.
So I guess it's useful. I guess it's useful to
So many of us are stuck at home. We need that rear window experience of just zooming into whatever our neighbors are up to.
Yeah, well, wow. Okay, I know what you're up to. But if you're at a big arena at some point in future, that would be a nice feature to have. Or if you're, you know, you have trouble seeing things far away, maybe there's a sign really far away, but you're, I don't know, mobbed in a crowd. Gosh, that's a nightmare. But you could take a pic, you know, you hold up your phone and zoom super, super into a sign that's really far away. Could be useful eventually. Right now, though, it seems... pretty like a, to quote V, like a meaningless flex on Samsung's part to say something like 100 times zoom.
I mean, it's not as meaningless as like the super, super zoom that we've seen from some other companies, right? Like other companies have tried more, haven't they?
I would, yes. So like optical zoom lenses on phones, not very new. I think Xiaomi or Oppo did one where they folded a periscope lens sort of thing into the, and similarly to how Samsung's sort of doing it. Okay. I don't think any of them have claimed up to 100 times zoom the way Samsung has, but I'll need to double check.
And this is 100 optical and digital, like combined, right?
Right. The 100 times space zoom is a combination of the optical and digital. So... that's definitely not like 100 times optical zoom. So pretty insane. One of my biggest challenges as a reviewer of these established phone lines is to figure out what's new and what's not. And that's the thing with Samsung Free. I was like, this looks like a new app. And they were like, it used to be called Samsung Daily, which used to be on the left side of the home screen. And so it's not new, but it's now called Samsung
Free. We built this thing. We can't just throw it away, you know?
So, yeah. So the other thing I was trying to figure out if it was new and a lot of things, right? One of the things is portrait mode. In my mind, it was just like they always called it portrait mode. But no, before this, they called it live focus. It's still pretty crap. I don't say it in as plain words in my review, but it's not great. They say they have improved their AI, but, you know, it's still not good at, again, I know the chat's been talking about how my hair exploded. There's wisps of hair around my head, and the AI is still not very good at detecting
every
those
portrait mode has issues
them.
With that. Even the Apple one, like, I've had issues with that when I try to take pictures of Sophia, my daughter, you know, like, her hair will go crazy and it just doesn't know what to do.
Yes.
I do feel like good portrait is one thing people want right now, right? It seems standard in Google's phones and the iPhone. Yes. So Samsung's just isn't quite there.
I love portrait modes, right? And Google has one of the best, in my opinion. I think iPhones are improving on that front too. Here's another basic UI thing that Samsung needs to improve, right? A lot of its fun modes like that are buried in more, whereas like on the Google camera app, which is also buries a lot of things in more, it's done better with the latest Android update to move some of those things. Like when you go to video mode, you get options for not panorama, time lapse and slow motion and that sort of thing now. On the Samsung, and Google also has a dedicated portrait mode like thing that you can quickly switch to. For Samsung, it's buried under more. And like there's a lot of more. Like there's a lot of things and more that you can do. I don't know if you can see it right now. Take a look at my face. But night mode is here, portrait mode is here. It's just always two swipes away to get to some of these things. But speaking of portrait mode, I play it with it. These new like blur effects and lighting effects are like fine. They're funny. I look wild. I'll post some of them to Instagram stories soon. Y'all can take a look. And I'll let y'all vote on them. But they're pretty fun. They're just not anything actually good or useful.
I think Apple, at least when it comes to that artificial lighting in their portrait modes, does a better job there. Whereas Google's computing capabilities is the thing that really makes their portrait modes stand out, even with a single lens camera. Can you use the Google camera on the Samsung phones for portrait?
You can download the app. There you go. And use it. Yeah. So that's what a lot of people do. That's one of the, that's a power user move, Dev. Good for you.
I mean, this is where we are, right? We're power users and super nerds over here.
But yeah, there's other things, right? That like we talked to Hiroshi Lockheimer last week about Android and Samsung and some of their collaborations there. And one of the things that's nice to see on One UI 3 is that like when you swipe to the right from the homepage now, you'll pull up the Google Discover feed, which is much better than what it was before, which is Samsung Daily. Which was just Bixby
everywhere.
It turns
out, like, whenever Samsung moves away from its own software, its phones get better. Shocker.
Yes. I'm so sorry, but getting rid of Bixby and that silly little Bixby button on the older phones, man. But to speaking of Samsung Daily, right? Samsung Daily, by the way, is no longer supported on Galaxy S20s with One UI 3. But Samsung Free, I found it super fun, surprisingly.
That's
like,
not encouraging.
I hated Samsung Daily, but Samsung Free, give me more. Because basically, I know, but basically it puts a bunch of like TV channels or publications or games that you can access and play for free, right? As the name suggests. So I didn't think I would like it until I just was checking it out as part of the review. And I found a channel that just played Gordon Ramsay's Kitchen Nightmares the whole time. 24/7 kitchen nightmares for free. And I was like, oh, bitch, I would do this. I was like, I will watch this. So I just watched Kitchen Nightmares while I was texting my friends and whatever for like all night.
You have Kitchen Nightmares on tons of services right now, probably, Sherlyn, but it was just there.
Yeah, but not like, it was just there and like I didn't have to go find it or whatever. And you know me, I like to put something on TV and still look at something else on my phone. I'm a terrible person.
I was really wondering like what basic game did you end up falling into because of Samsung Free? Was it any, did anything call to you?
No, thankfully I didn't spend too much time looking at the games. I will say I've played a lot of Two Dots like I mentioned a few weeks ago, so Still maining Two Dots right now. It's a thing.
Let's talk about the competition for these phones, because I'm curious about where the Android landscape is right now. These are the first major new phones of the year. We're expecting a ton more, but probably not for a while. Are these running the latest, greatest Snapdragon processors? Is there anything major we're looking forward to that they don't have?
So I'll start with what they do have, right? It's Snapdragon 888, which is the high-end phone, not that confusing Snapdragon 870 that Qualcomm just announced, which we will get to in a little bit. 8 gigs of RAM, 128 gigs or 256 gigs of storage, depending on your configuration. At $800.
Yeah.
Honestly, that's pretty seriously good. Out there in the market at this price range, you have the Pixel 5, which is $100 cheaper, and uses like an old ass. Can I say ass? Old crap.
That thing is like basically 3 years behind at this point, chip-wise. Yeah.
Yeah. So the Pixel 5 is one of the competitors. The other competitor is the OnePlus 8T, which uses an 865, I believe, and I think maybe slightly more RAM, but I have to double check. But here's the thing. I feel like the OnePlus 8T and the Galaxy S21 are very different phones. It's the OnePlus 8T is a good phone at that price range for the power user. You know, you have things like 120 hertz refresh rate, you have very clean software, you have sort of a quad
cameras,
sensor array, but I'm not a big fan of OnePlus's cameras in general. They're not great. And also, instead of a telephoto, you have a 5-megapixel macro lens. So it's like, if you really like close-ups,
I feel like a macro lens for a lot of people would be more useful than an extra telephoto. Like, especially, you see something outside and you're like, look at this cool bug. And then you start to realize you can only focus to a certain point with your phone cameras, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I haven't had that problem. So maybe this is a use case difference.
But yeah.
Wow. I do like nature, but I don't get up close with bugs. Dang. But I will say this. The Samsung, the S21 Ultra, does have a sort of faux macro mode where like it switches to the ultra wide angle lens when it senses that you're very, very close to your subject. So there is that option where you still get the focus, right? I do see your point about like a 5-megapixel macro being more useful than say a 10 times optical zoom for someone. But anyway, that's the OnePlus 8T. And I feel like OnePlus appeals to its very hardcore base of users and people who are willing to experiment a little bit. But for the most part, people want to go with a brand they already know. And the Galaxy S series is really well established. Because
you could buy it anywhere it is still the iPhone equivalent for Android, you know? So
right.
Kind of makes sense.
And speaking of the iPhone equivalent to this, the final competitor for this that I considered for my reviews, the iPhone 12, the one up from the mini. Camera setup is similar. They're all like 12 megapixel wide, ultra wide.
It's a beautiful phone. I have an 11 Pro. I bought my wife the iPhone 12 recently, like yanking her out of Androidverse because I'm just tired of juggling two ecosystems in the same house. It's not worth it. But just looking at the screen on the iPhone 12, like the way it's sort of painted on to beautiful OLED screen. They're still stuck with 60 hertz refresh rate, but every time I look at her phone, I was like, it looks a little brighter and a little punchier than mine because it's actually using, I think, a newer type of Apple's OLED display. So there are benefits there.
Have you looked at the Samsung phone though? You know what I mean?
Like the S21.
Samsung phone screens. They're the market leaders for a reason in terms of screens, right? Their screens are amazing. I will say, when I saw the iPhone 12 mini at my hands-on, I did find it nice, too. I think we're at a point where most screens are nice.
Well, at least if they're... Because Samsung is AMOLED. The iPhone, the new Retina XR, is also OLED. So as long as like you've got the OLED, then you have this nice OLED, painted effect right on the screen that looks beautiful. I think at this point, I can tell when a phone is going LCD. And maybe has like a slightly lesser screen. That's immediately noticeable to me. Yeah.
To your point too about the screens, right? Like I made that rookie mistake of getting tricked by the saturation on Samsung's screen where like I took a picture on the S21 and I was like, oh my gosh, this looks beautiful. Shared it to Instagram and then looked at it on my other phone, like a Pixel, and I was like, damn it, this is
lower that saturation, normal. Samsung. Come on. It's a lie.
I was pretty bummed by that, and that was like so far on record my lowest liked Instagram post today.
Wow,
so I blame
Samsung. You're ugly duckling. Final question for you between all this: so S21 versus the S21 Ultra. I assume the Ultra is like more expensive and everything. Who should get the S21? Who should get the S21 Ultra?
A lot of it boils down to the size of this thing. I found the S20 Ultra, which is last year's Ultra, heavy. It was cumbersome. And the size of the S20 regular, which is last year's, was much better for me. And this is very much the same, except it looks just so much prettier. I'm okay with the full HD resolution. Mm-hmm. That's perfectly fine by me. It runs, like an Olympic champion, really. And there's just... I can't think of anything that I want that I don't have other than micro SD card slot, but I rely on cloud storage. I think for most mainstream people, S21 will be just fine, especially at the price. And then go up to the S21 Ultra if you're really looking for a few more high-end features, if you really think you want good telephoto and zoom pictures. And, you know, I do think it does have better, like, cameras. The S21 Ultra definitely has better, you know, clarity in its pictures as well from some of the samples I have seen. So, yeah, I mean, those are the reasons. Everything else is largely... You also get nicer color options on the smaller phones, too. So,
man, looking... We're watching really like some black video of this, too. And looking at the side view of these things in this camera hump, I'm like, it's starting to look like one of those thick dad wallets. You know, like, just getting a little too thick, I think. But, I think the Ultra.
Yeah, that's the bigger phone for sure. And that's why the hump is bigger with bigger cameras in there. Whereas it's a little bit more flush on the S21. So again, I feel like the S21 is good enough for most people. This is the phone that I'll probably recommend my mom get when she wants to upgrade. It's nice. I have very few bad things to say about it.
Okay, well, thank you, Sherlyn, for all this. If you guys have any questions about the S21 or S21 Ultra, shoot us an email at podcastinggadget.com, and we will take a look at all your questions. Let's move on to some other news stories. And one thing that actually dropped this morning as we're recording the podcast is some details on Apple's rumored VR headset plans and AR headset plans from Bloomberg. It is, first of all, we know Apple was kind of working on something just because this category, right, is interesting enough and new enough, and Magic Leap had gotten billions in funding to try to develop these perfect AR glasses, and they completely failed. So the door is wide open for a company like Apple to kind of jump in. Microsoft is kind of getting there with HoloLens too. But what Bloomberg is saying is kind of interesting, right? Is they're saying Apple is working on a standalone VR headset that's going to be very, very expensive, very powerful, even more powerful than the M1 chips that are currently in Macs, potentially made out of cloth. Right now, they're working on a couple of designs. It may have bands, which none of Apple's mobile devices have. I think the key, though, is that this thing, it's not going to be a mainstream device. It sounds like Apple is planning something that is super, super premium that developers can use to start building things within its own AR, VR platform. And eventually they're going to come up with a pair of actual AR glasses. So maybe more like Magic Leap, when the tech is there for it. Bloomberg says like could be as soon as 2022, when we see these VR glasses or these VR goggles, which seems kind of, soon, but basically Apple is starting from scratch here, right? Because what we've seen with the VR market is that everybody, Oculus and HTC Vive launched at the same time, I believe 2016. Steam VR is a platform, started building up there. Oculus has its own platform. Windows has its mixed reality platform. These are all PC-focused things, right? And then Sony's out there with PlayStation VR, which, hey, works really well and ended up bringing basic VR to a lot of people with those consoles. But so far, VR has been very PC-focused. Apple has been shut out entirely. You know, it's sort of like it is a weird thing where they're missing out on this entire new medium. So it makes sense that they're working on their own things, that they're maybe not striving to solve all the problems of VR with this first device, because, hey, that's what Facebook's trying to do with the Oculus Quest and the Quest 2. And I think they're doing a really good job of it, but there are still problems and there's still data issues with Facebook and everything. And also, like, even though Facebook is making these things more more inexpensive, right? The Quest 2 starts at, is it $199 now or $299? It is cheaper than the Quest 1 was. And it's still pretty powerful, too, and you could do a lot with it. But we're still waiting for a lot of good content. I don't know if it's a great buy for everybody. But we are getting there. So that part of it makes sense. One thing that is weird, they say Apple had trouble fitting in space. They had trouble making them light enough for people to actually wear these headsets. So they actually remove the extra space that's in a lot of headsets to make room for glasses, like my thick glasses. And I already have trouble fitting glasses into VR headsets. Like, I always feel like I'm about to crunch my glasses here. The story says that Apple is just like, okay, well, let's just remove glasses support and we'll just add support for, you know, replaceable prescription lenses, which is a thing you can do on certain VR headsets already. You could do that with the Quest and Quest 2. It hasn't worked out that well for me. I did get a pair of prescription glasses from Facebook to test, or prescription goggles. It's fine, but I think it's easier for me to like keep my glasses on and try out multiple headsets at once. So that issue could be an issue for Apple because it takes that VR device into like almost like a medical category where you'll need specific, you know, approval to deliver prescription lenses or something. So that could be an issue. So Apple's doing something with VR. We're kind of getting more details. I think what is funny is I woke up, I saw that story.
Yeah.
And it is me at Oculus Connect 6 at the top of that Bloomberg story. And that feels really weird. It reminds me of when you're in VR, when you're wearing a headset, you have no idea what's happening outside, right? And I didn't see a photographer. I never had to be like, hey, cool, it's okay if you take a photo of me. When I take photos of people at events, I ask them, especially if they're in VR, because you may be doing something that looks a little weird or silly and you don't want to be public with that. But yeah, I believe I was testing the hand tracking on the Oculus Quest. So I have this like weird fist pose or something. Anyway, it's when you go to any event,
exactly,
you basically sign a waiver that's like, hey, you're going to be photographed. You're going to be videotaped. It's just funny to see myself pop up here.
I
thing.
I just want to say it's a good picture of you. It's not even a dig because your face is half covered with the headset, but it's a good picture.
Sorry. No. I think that's why it's a good picture of me is that I'm wearing a VR headset.
You
and
look
I'm
like you're
like
flexing. It's pretty good.
A semi pose. Because I think at that point I was trying to grab something with the hand gesture. So yeah, that was funny to see. We will certainly have more news in Apple's VR plans. And, you know, I've talked to some people and a lot of folks are just like, this is a very dumb strategy from Apple. But I'll say it kind of makes a lot of sense for them. They don't want to, nobody wants to like build their entire strategy around VR because AR and AR glasses is kind of where we're headed, or at least mixed reality glasses that can kind of do both. So Apple is swinging for the device that's coming 5 years from now, you know, because that's going to be a huge new category. Whereas we've seen so far, I think Oculus has done a good job of basically perfecting what a good standalone VR headset could be like. And even that is still limited for a lot of people. It's still very closed off. I can't see anything happening outside. If I go into VR, I can't see my wife. I can't see my child. You know, like you are in your own zone. So I do think like AR is going to be the thing that's going to be a little more broadly accessible.
Yeah, I'm with you. There. And it's not like we haven't heard that Apple has been working on, you know, some sort of headset for a long time. These rumors have been swirling for a long time since they made hires in those departments.
Yeah.
We're just, I think, getting closer to finding out more. I think 2022, if that's really the case, you know, of them being ready to start selling these or launching these, we might even hear something by the end of this year from Apple.
Well, probably, like, I wouldn't be surprised if they tease it.
Exactly. At the, like, one at more the thing, and then someone puts on glasses,
but,
that sort of thing.
Yeah, one more thing. You've actually been in VR this whole time. Don't forget Magic Leap, guys. Like, we've been writing about Magic Leap for years. Like, they got a ton of funding, and they were so hyped up. Just fizzled and burned. Just, they couldn't make it work. And I think Apple is afraid of that. Apple's afraid of the potential problems we're already seeing in the VR industry, too. That's one reason why Microsoft, you know, they have HoloLens. They have some Windows mixed reality headsets kind of out there. But they haven't brought it to Xbox, which I think would be a big thing for them. I feel like a lot of people are waiting for wireless VR to become a thing. So maybe that'll be the next version of the PS, the PlayStation VR, or the next version of whatever they bring to Xbox. So this is a really nascent industry. And that's why I think we're seeing a lot of different people experiment with different strategies. I wouldn't call this crazy for Apple yet. This may actually be the thing that we need to get them to AR, you know, sooner than other folks.
We'll see. Some other news happened this week, of course, and we can't talk about all of them, but I did want to shout out the Snapdragon 870 5G chipset. This is Qualcomm's new so-called high-end, you know, premium mobile chipset, right? This follows up the Snapdragon 865 Plus or the 865, which is kind of confusing, right? Because didn't the company just announce the Snapdragon 888 in December? But okay. So the Snapdragon 888, right? It has different architecture altogether. It's got that one, you know, prime core, the superpower, like X1, I think, prime. And then it's got the regular, like, big cores and then the, like, little cores. The 870 5G is more similar to the 865 and 865 Plus in that respect. It does, you know, have a bit of a slightly faster graphics processor. The Adreno graphics processor is a little bit faster. And then that's pretty much it. This is, it's like, for those brands that want to get a Snapdragon 888 or want sort of high-end power but don't want to get the 888 for some reason, you know, the 870.
Is there a price difference? Is there a power difference? What do you think?
Right. So like, here's the big difference. It is a 7-nanometer chipset versus the 888, which is 5 nanometers. That's the huge difference, right? And that's why I kind of want to be like, why do you want to make a new 7nm chipset when you already have the 5nm? But that will be cheaper.
It'll be cheaper.
Power draw might be different. You know what I mean? It probably is. But then this does give phone companies the option of, here's still a good high-end iterative upgrade from last year that you can buy that won't be as expensive as the 5-nanometer 888.
I think we're seeing like there's a need for more variety in chipsets, right? Like that's why the Pixel 5 ended up being stuck with like a 2-year-old chipset because there wasn't like that, not quite high end, but inexpensive and bigly affordable and efficient chip for
it's hard to say that. Why that decision was made, just because I feel like Qualcomm's product portfolio is already pretty segmented. You've got the 800 series, then you've got the 600 mid-range series, but in between you have the 700 series, then you got the 400 series. Fam, I could talk to you about Snapdragon numbers all day. Don't even.
Stay tuned for more Snapdragon Talk.
Snapdragon numbers.
Snap Talk with Sherlyn Lowe. Yeah.
Snap Talk. But yeah, so it was just interesting to see because we talked about this slightly when we were talking about the S21 earlier. Will there be maybe a new, by the way, the Galaxy S20 FE, will there be a S21 FE later this year that uses the 870 instead of an 888 and therefore be a lot cheaper? Sure, but also want to shout out that for those of you that just bought an S20 FE, I'm so sorry, a little violin for you because you just got showed up by the S21 because that's the better phone to get for the money, right? Like a few months later, Samsung just showed you a better phone for $100-ish more.
It's never a good time to buy a Samsung phone because they're always ready to launch something that's different and it's going to be a little cheaper.
That question on Twitter too, which is when is a good time to buy a Samsung phone? And I was just like, don't buy it when it just launched. Just don't never. That's the first thing. Buy it a few weeks later.
Depends on how much you need a new phone,
right? If you can wait, you'll almost certainly always find it cheaper a month later.
I do feel like maybe they need to do a better job of telling us what's coming, you know, and that may affect sales or something, but at least that would be a little more transparent with audiences. So you could be like, okay, you want the S21 and Ultra right now. You want a Note?
Yeah.
Wait a couple months for the Note. You want something cheaper? We will have an SE FE later this year.
Well, we more or less know the cadence of these things, right? We know that in the fall, we can always expect a new Note, some new iPhones, some new Pixels. We know that in February, we always see a new February or January, in this case, we see a new S20 something. Mm-hmm. And then new Sony phones, new OnePlus comes around the same time too.
But the FE was a surprise last year,
ish.
Right? And we don't know.
They could stand to be more transparent for sure, but I think there's still this whole we want to surprise everyone, we hate the leakers kind of deal going on. So we'll see.
It's okay. You're Samsung. Yeah. People will buy your phones. Trust me. Let's move on to what we've been working on. And I just want to shout out a couple of things here. Ooh. ZenBook Duo, the Asus ZenBook Duo, which won our best PC category at CES, by the way. A very cool laptop. It is their latest dual screen machine. I am testing that right now for a review for next week. I'm really digging it. There's a reason I recommended it as our best at CES, because I do think Asus has done a good job of optimizing and bringing their dual screen technology forward and the software and everything around that. So that's pretty good. I also actually, as we're recording this, I have my webcam perched on the edge of Dell's 40-inch ultra wide monitor. And that's something I'll be writing about as well. It's pretty cool. It's a pretty big monitor, but I'm also coming at it from a 34-inch ultra wide, which that is my sweet spot for desktop computing. I'm not feeling a huge difference there, and it's kind of big and unwieldy and not so great from games at this point from what I've seen, but we'll have more on that soon. We're both also working on stuff around Sundance, right? So we will, I'm working on a preview thing. They're doing something really cool this year where they're doing this VR interface. So I actually just tested it out. You can go to a web page, and if you do that on an Oculus Quest or a VR headset, it will launch a WebXR experience where you can go in and talk with people, but also through web browsers, people can also log in and do walk around Second Life or something and, walk up to people and do video chats with the VR people. So they are experimenting with all this cool new stuff. We'll be writing about that. And some of the VR stuff we see at Sundance, probably some of the movies too, right?
I only just cleared most of the Samsung stuff off my plate. I still have some Samsung work left to do, which is the video. I know people who are our YouTube viewers are like, where's your review video? It's coming. Be patient, please, because I really didn't have any time. I didn't have any time to put this review together, basically, right? Because we had a public holiday. Great. Anyway.
We had a holiday, and also Samsung gave you guys hardware right after CES, announced it right after CES.
Don't even get me started on Samsung, because that's mad at them. So just cleared that. Still have a little bit of Samsung work to do. Still have some regular new stuff to do. But Sundance stuff, I'm trying to start getting through and sorting out and figuring out a plan with you, Devendra. And then also, I'm still testing out the Amazon Halo. Don't forget. We're going to come to a decision
You keep breaking the tone warnings on the Halo. It's like, I don't know what to do with this girl.
She's not a person. She's not listening to me. She has so many emotions. And you know, more reviews like that. And also, like, other briefings have just been coming up. It kind of just never ends because I got a strange invite from my inbox recently. So I'm pretty sure I was hopeful there might be a bit of a lull coming up because, you know, Samsung is done. But no, I'm pretty also, just so you know, a lot of people were asking, is there a new Galaxy Z Fold? I'm pretty sure we'll be seeing that. I'm making a wild guess, but kind of also going like, I'm pretty sure that's coming in February. So stay tuned for that. That's my work I'm working on.
Let's move on to our pop culture picks. While I have you, Sherlyn, what do you want to talk about or recommend this year for us or this week?
I have seen a lot of crap. This is might be too early to recommend, but I don't know if people know this, but my favorite Avenger is Vision.
Your favorite Avenger, okay.
My favorite Avenger is Vision. And so, obviously...
He's a cool dude.
WandaVision is the show I'm going to recommend this week. I watched the first two episodes. It was really... I blazed right through because each episode was barely like 25 minutes long. And it's
with like 10 minutes of credits.
The credits are so long. I was like, what the hell is going on? So it stars, obviously it's got Scarlet Witch and Vision, you know, and it's basically set. It seems like it's an old TV show, like I Love Lucy and a Bewitched from the 60s, I guess.
I believe we cannot call her. So the way this works is that we cannot call her Scarlet Witch.
Oh,
because that is an X-Men character. And at least in the MCU, she is, because actually in one of the crappy X-Men movies, they also had a Scarlet Witch too, but that's a Fox title. But anyway, it is, it's
Wanda Maximoff.
It's Wanda Maximoff.
Played by Elizabeth Olsen and Vision played by Paul Bettany. And I love me some Vision. And I love seeing Vision in his true human form. Even in black and white. And you know, this is so far just mostly a comedy. Really, it feels like, I grew up on Bewitched. I don't know what that says about how old I am.
It is Bewitched. Bewitched. It's the Dick Van Dyke Show. Yeah. It's I Love Lucy. Yeah. It is all those classic sitcoms. And I am shocked by how much they went hard into it.
Very hard.
Of doing this. Like,
and
it's surprising. I can't say I didn't need two episodes of being stuck in an old sitcom, but it's fun.
It's been surprisingly fun. I didn't think I would like it because I'm not a big fan of old-timey black and white stuff, but Elizabeth Olsen's acting is pretty incredible in this. I'm like, she sells just the perfect amount of incredulous at the situation, but also fits right in with an almost Stepford Wives sort of situation. Great. It's just great. And then Paul Bettany, I mean, Vision's just bumbling around as Vision, so it's great.
He's great. He's pure Dick Van Dyke energy over there. Right. I also really like Catherine Hahn in that show, who is, you know, an actor who I love, and she has appeared in all sorts of stuff. But here, she is channeling that annoying 50s neighbor housewife vibe, I think, perfectly.
My last word on WandaVision, it will be this, right? It's still in two episodes, and it's still in that sort of weird, strange black and white situation, but they are going to break out of it, and that's what I'm really looking forward to seeing more of, because we know what happened in Endgame. Well,
something's going
on. We know what happened in Infinity War with Vision, right? Before I went to watch Infinity War, I told everyone on Twitter, I was like,
wait a minute.
People were like, who's your favorite Avenger? I was like, I've decided it's Vision. They went, oh God, who's going to tell her? I was like, oh no, what happened? He dies.
Yeah.
So I'm excited to see if this is all a figment of her imagination or if Vision is truly back because of some sort of time change or whatever. That's what I'm looking forward to seeing. Yeah, so watch that with me.
I'm sure I like the construct of the show, and I'm looking to see, like, okay, clearly they're either in some sort of weird simulation or something, or is it something they put them, like, is this something Wanda put herself in just to keep herself safe from the rest of humanity, or does some supervillain have them connected?
Exactly.
One thing I kind of like imagined when I was talking about this on my movie podcast is that what if they use the end of this to be like, this is the reveal of the X-Men in the MCU because we are waiting for that. Yeah, and I think they've already said that they're working on a way to like eventually bring X-Men characters into this because now Disney has the Fox stuff and Fox had MCU had all the X-Men stuff for a while. So now's the chance for them to start bringing some of these characters. I don't know if I'm ready for that. I'm not sure if I want to replace Hugh Jackman in my heart as Wolverine, because he was always my favorite X-Man. And after Logan, that was definitely his farewell to that role. But, you know, there are people. I can imagine like a Joe Manganiello doing a really fun Wolverine. Ooh. And he's already kind of done stuff like that. The werewolf guy from True Blood.
He's pretty good,
He's a fun, nerdy guy. He's already kind of, he's older. He's like mid-40s right now. But you could do a good 10 years worth of like Wolverine movies with him too.
He would be a good Wolverine. Yeah, for sure.
I love him. He's also, he's a guy known for hosting D&D campaigns in his basement in LA with other like notable Hollywood stars. So I love him.
I love him and his wife. And
a true nerd. True nerd. Yes. Love it over there. Well, thank you for the fun pick, Trillin, because my pop culture picks, not so fun. Not so fun, because I saw two documentaries this week, and this week, you know, we celebrated Martin Luther King Jr. Day on Monday, and I saw the documentary MLK FBI, directed by Sam Pollard, who, and this really dives into the FBI's just sheer, I don't know, sheer obsession with destroying Martin Luther King, and it is quite something. Like, you've probably heard, like, oh yeah, the FBI just didn't really like him. Mm. But no, like, it is a full-on, it was like a full-on, you know, drive and case by the FBI to destroy MLK as somebody who was being, becoming a bit of a, you know, an actual thought leader for Black Americans. Mm. And they, you know, they bugged his phones. They had people listening to him in hotel rooms, like right opposite him. They did a lot of coverage about affairs he's had with women, and their plan was to like basically destroy him as a moral authority. I think the documentary does a great job of bringing in new insights and just seeing just how far the FBI went in this respect too. And it brings up an important point. We talk a lot about Martin Luther King Jr. today, in reverential tones. I think history has really looked kindly on everything he stood for. But back then, most of America hated him. And most of America supported the FBI and what they were doing. And the FBI has always had like a really good PR spin, you know, that they were protecting America. I grew up watching The X-Files and Silence of the Lambs and everything. It's like, I didn't learn about all this stuff until much later in my life. So I think this documentary is worth watching just to kind of see what the extent to which the FBI, a federal organization, spent decades just trying to destroy Martin Luther King Jr. And they don't, like, they can't say anything specifically about his assassination, but there are certainly elements where they're like, did they just not try to stop somebody who was trying to kill him? Because actually it's in their best interest. So anyway, I think it's really worth watching, especially after this week, especially after goddamn government organizations like ICE were tweeting out respect to MLK, and everybody was like, you're ICE. No, you were actually directly opposed to everything he stood for. But thank you for that, I guess. I also saw another documentary called The Dissident by Brian Fogel. He did the Oscar-winning documentary Icarus a couple years ago. And this one is all about the story behind the death of Washington Post journalist Jamal Khashoggi and Saudi Arabia's involvement in that. And just, hey, this is worth watching too, because it's a dangerous time for journalists. They're getting arrested, they're getting killed all over the world. And this kind of dives into what was happening and the reactions from his fiance, people who worked with him, and the exploration of, like, you know, police in Turkey too, who were like, they were investigating this and just watching Saudi Arabia lie about what happened to him. It's a gruesome story. It's terrible what happened to him. And I think it says a lot about what Saudi Arabia is doing as a country, but I think everybody should watch this documentary just to see like the full scale of how hard they went against him too. And hey, it turns out it's not that different from how the FBI went after Martin Luther King Jr. So I think that parallel is definitely there. So those are my picks.
Those are some pretty heavy picks.
Something more fun.
Exactly.
Something more fun, because it's been a very serious week for me. I think after the inauguration, we got some great Bernie Sanders memes. And I think that's probably one of the best things we got, because he was everybody was socially distanced out there outside. And he was there huddled up in just like his dad jacket and fuzzy wool mittens, and just like chilling, just like,
so good.
not giving any crap. So love the memes. There's one of him on the Spirited Away train, one of him next to sad Keanu. There's one in every respect. Fits everywhere. I love the Queen's Gambit one. Oh man.
There are a lot. I saw a Colbert one where he's on the Colbert show, and Stephen Colbert tweeted it out saying that okay, we'll turn up the heat already. Our video producer Luke Brooks also made one that has a sort of throw shout out, I guess, to if you, I think I'm going to end things. I think that's what the movie is. There's one from Bird Box. So many. They're all great. And what we want you to do, dear listener and viewers, is send us your Bernie memes. Hey, if you've been making them, I'd love to tweet them out. Send them to us. We could all use a laugh. If you're not tuning into the live stream or watching this on YouTube just yet, my dear podcast listener, you really should consider.
Look at this segment and see those clips. It'll all be up on YouTube, folks. Well, I guess we should just wrap it up for now. Thank you, Sherlyn.
All right, so that's it for our episode, everyone. Thank you, as always, for listening. Our theme music is by game composer Dale North. Our outro music is by our very own Terrence O'Brien. The podcast is produced by Ben Elman. You can find Devendra online at
Devendra on Twitter, or talking about movies and TV at /filmcast@slashfilm.com. We just had an episode where we were talking about Baccarat, which was my favorite movie of last year. That's in our After Dark segments right now. So check that out.
The Vendress side hustles. Well, if you want to live tweet WandaVision's new episodes with me, let's watch it together, guys. I'm on Twitter at Sherlyn Lowe. Email us your thoughts, your memes, and your feedback at podcast@engadget.com. Leave us a review on iTunes, please, so everyone can look at your memes. And subscribe on anything that gets podcasts, including Spotify. Wow, I do like nature, but I don't get up close with bugs.